today.
Well done, Paradox Girl. I suppose it'd be too much to ask you to go back in time and stop the monster before he wrecked half the city.
Why would I do that? He hadn't stomped on my waffle back then.
Yes, but I mean... Okay, whatever. Thanks for helping, anyway, and thanks for saving me.
Oh, right.
It's no use! My heavy light beams aren't doing anything to it! See if you can-
Welcome!
Professor Zoom Productions, in association with the Fire and Water Podcast Network, proudly present for your listening pleasure the Done in One Wonders Podcast Wonder Show, hosted by Professor Zoom Yukinori. Today's episode, Cause That's Unchecked. Previously on the Done in One Wonders Podcast Wonder Show. Lanos?
Lamo came back. How come crazy Lamo computer ain't crazy anymore?
This is Maya.
Oh, wow. A mother box.
She crashed amid a radioactive asteroid field. I had intercepted her transmissions for assistance and devised a plan to rescue her.
So that why Lamo's stealing all that stuff with Cowboy Man to build Lamo's robot body.
And you needed the Stellarium to withstand the radioactivity of the asteroid field. We did find evidence of transmissions that originated from somewhere near Apocalypse in the pre-crisis timeline. I am relieved to know that they were from a mother box.
The cover story they had provided, thanks to my ingeniously installed false memories, made them all completely oblivious to their true intentions. Even Lanos and Maya themselves. For the backdoor protocol I had installed will enable them to carry out our subliminal scheme, if you will, without even their notice.
Very good.
Lamo and Maya sitting in a tree. I-N-T-E-R facing.
Dr. Manhattan?
Zoom Yukinori, Tobias Manning. We have a podcast to create.
And now, the continuation.
Greetings and welcome to the 14th episode of the Done in One Wonders Podcast Wonder Show, a celebration of comic book tales that are able to tell a complete story within a single issue. A proud and unabashedly conceited member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I am your host, Professor Zoom Yukinori, and I am so delighted to be here. In fact, I'm as excited as an electron that absorbed a quantum of energy and jumped to a higher atomic orbital. And much of that excitement comes from my being able to introduce this episode's special guest. Drawn here by our
neutral lepton beacon.
Neutrino beam scans conducted during our previous episode from the year... Well, to be honest, I'm not sure what year he is from, since from his perspective it would be any number of possibilities. At any rate, I am honored to introduce Dr. Jonathan Osterman, otherwise known as the Superpowered Watchman, codenamed Dr. Manhattan. Welcome to our humble podcast, Dr. Osterman.
Please. John is fine.
Very good, John. We certainly appreciate you taking the time to join us for...
I have no choice, since I am already here.
Hey now, by my reckoning, you just showed up and insisted on doing this here podcast with us. No one here is forcing you to...
You misunderstand. I have to do this because I am already doing this.
Already doing what now? Perhaps it would help if we provide a brief explanation of who Dr. Manhattan is, how he came to be, and his unique perspective of existence. Lenos?
Greetings and salutations. I am Lenos, the love-struck automation Maya is enamored of. How may I serve you today?
Fascinating. I have never seen particles coalesce in such fashions before. The green one seems to harness emotional fortitude, and the red appears bonded to the intrinsic field of the universe itself. Wondrous. When I see the two interface, they are both incredibly beautiful.
That does not compute for this one as well. Saving notation for future reference.
Wait, John, you are actually seeing Lenos and Maya in another point in time? My understanding from Watchmen was that you are only able to observe all events and actions of your own timeline.
Yes, I am merely a quantum observer of my own history, and the history I witness. And yet, I am now able to expand my perception somewhat to catch a brief glimpse of the quantum stream of another consciousness. I suspect it is because of the time when I am subjected to a dense tachyon stream on November 2nd, 1985.
The tachyons used by Adrian Veidt to muddle your quantum senses, as mentioned in issue 12 of the Watchmen series.
Veidt, yes. Though I do not understand why you prefer the constant designation of Watchmen, which is a derogatory nickname for the costumed crime fighters by public protesters. I also do not know what you mean by your series of issues, even though you explain it to me about 4 minutes from now.
Can someone please explain it to me?
My apologies, Mr. Manning. Lenos?
Accessing an abridged recapitulation of the history data file of Dr. Manhattan. Compiled from excerpts from the Watchmen entry of Who's Who, the official directory of the DC Universe, update 1987, volume 5, page 20. The DC Heroes role-playing game module, Who Watches the Watchmen, page 9. And the abridged preview of Dr. Manhattan, Superpowers and the Superpowers, by entity Dr. Milton Glass, published in Watchmen, issue 4, pages 30 and 31. Dr. Jonathan Osterman was an ordinary nuclear physicist who, in 1959, was accidentally locked inside a test chamber being used for an experiment to remove the intrinsic field that held together the atomic structure of a concrete block. As a result, Osterman's own intrinsic field was removed from his body, causing his body to disintegrate. However, a form of electromagnetic pattern resembling consciousness survived, and Osterman was able, over a number of months, to rebuild an approximation of the body he had lost through sheer force of will. In the process of reconstructing his corporeal form, Osterman achieved a complete mastery of all matter, giving him complete control over his own atomic structure as well as the atoms around him, at a virtually unlimited scale. His military backers marketed Osterman as a superhero, codenamed Dr. Manhattan. Due to his enormous powers, Dr. Manhattan's very existence altered the balance of power between the United States and the Soviet Union in America's favor. He was responsible for America's victory in the Vietnam War. Dr. Manhattan's powers had also made possible amazing advances in science and technology.
However, Osterman himself had grown increasingly disinterested in human affairs. His transformation enabled him to perceive reality in ways that ordinary people could not. Capable of seeing everything at the most basic subatomic level, Osterman could see no discernible difference between people and inert matter. Furthermore, his newfound powers enabled him to see events in his past and future as if they coexisted with events in the present, as if he was living his entire life at once. While he has an unerring knowledge of what he will do and observe in the future, he does not act on this information in any way, since all of his actions and responses are apparently predetermined. Aware that he has no free will, Osterman would eventually lose more and more of his humanity as he became more and more of an emotionless, detached observer.
Thank you, Lanos. And to clarify for those who are unfamiliar, Dr. Manhattan is an integral character in the brilliant 12-issue Watchmen series by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons, which was one of the first comic book stories to deconstruct the superhero concept by providing one view of how the presence of costumed heroes and villains, and actual superpowers, would change the actual world as we know it, for better and worse. It also offered an alternative take on what it would mean for a hero to literally save the world. The story of the Watchmen technically does not take place in the DC Comics continuity, or at least it did not at the time it was first published back in 1986 and 1987. I understand that may be, or may no longer be, the case, depending on when you are listening to this particular podcast. At any rate, in honor of our illustrious guest, this podcast episode will cover a single-issue comic book story that is not a part of the DC Universe, and also employs a unique storytelling method that is very apropos. I am, of course, referring to Lanos. This, the Done in One Wonder we are spotlighting today, is Paradox Girl, Issue 1, a 2014 digital comic released by independent publisher Hana Comics in the U.S. on February 11th, 2015, according to the Comics Vine website. This story had been most recently printed in a 2019 trade paperback by Top Cow Productions, entitled Paradox Girl First Cycle, which collects the first six Paradox Girl adventures, plus some extra short stories that were previously available only to high-tier backers when this series was originally a Kickstarter project. In fact, if this podcast were sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com, which it isn't, I would highly recommend this trade paperback, which normally retails for $19.99, but is available only for $11.59, a 42% savings. I had found each one of the Paradox Girl stories to be a fun and brilliantly creative read, and I must admit I had some difficulty choosing which of these six adventures to chronicle on this podcast program. So I just went with the most logical course of action and decided on the first adventure. That way we can all experience the wonder of being introduced to this refreshingly unique and clever take on the time-traveling hero concept. And speaking of experiencing the wonder, unlike the other comic book tales that we had covered on previous episodes of this podcast, you can actually read this Done in One Wonder online for free right now. Simply visit ParadoxGirl.com and scroll down a tad until you see a link that says Issue Number 1 Read Online. That will take you to a Tumblr page post that includes all of the story pages. So to all of you listeners who prefer to read the comic book story before you listen to our review, please go ahead and do so now. We will wait.
Provided that you depress the pause button on your podcast player application first.
Pause buttons can get depressed? No, you overgrown swamp weed. You depress the pause button. Ooh. Grundy would tell Pause Button that Pause Button has no eyes and cannot watch Little Magic Friendship Pony Show. Not being able to watch Little Magic Friendship Pony Show would depress Grundy, so maybe it depressed Pause Button too. Grundy, you... never mind.
How apropos.
If my services are no longer required, Entity Zoom Yukinori, Maya and I have some tasks to perform.
Heh, I bet. Heh heh heh.
Gentlemen, it's fine, Lanos. We will call if we need you. Have fun.
Have fun? You're thinking the same thing we are.
Let's just focus on the Paradox Girl comic book, shall we? Let us begin with the lighthearted cover, beautifully rendered by the simple yet expressive line work of artist Ishan Lee. Our titular heroine, Paradox Girl, in her trademark business suit,
which you describe in about 13 minutes as a short skirt and a long jacket, as if you are making a pop culture reference.
Why, yes, that would be very apt. And that does reference the title of a song I'd first heard in the mid-1990s. Have you listened to Cake as well, John?
I am not aware that cake can make a sound, unless it is frozen. Though we do talk about a waffle that goes...
Say, Doc, it may be a good idea to put a bridle on that there timey-wimey bit of yours, and just focus on the here and now.
I am. Here and now, we are talking about noisy cake. You are complaining about my succinct plot summary. Solomon Grundy is laughing at the noise a waffle makes. I am introduced inappropriately as a watchman. I have an epiphany, and the podcast ends. And I'm certain you will make a full recovery, Zoom Yukinori.
What?
Ooh, that don't sound ominous at all.
And we are also talking about the cover, which takes place in front of the home of Paradox Girl.
Right. And Paradox Girl herself, in her trademark business suit,
which you describe in about 12 minutes as a short skirt and a long jacket.
You already said that, John.
Indeed I am.
At any rate, Paradox Girl stood front and center atop the raised surface in the foreground, which we will get to in a moment. And she was surrounded by 17 other Paradox Girls, many wearing the same business suit, though a few were wearing different attire. All were doing a number of different activities in this single captured moment. One was sunbathing in a two-piece swimsuit on the roof. Another was wearing an apron and cooking on an outdoor grill. One was in work boots mowing the lawn. One was fixing another one's hair while she was reading a book. Two were climbing a ladder to get to the roof, while another hung playfully off the roof's edge. One was practicing a golf swing on the driveway, while another was chastising a garden gnome. And no, I don't get it either. Another one was sitting on the same raised surface watching the driveway action while eating popcorn and wearing a blue cape with a P emblem on it, similar to the Superman S shield. And near the foreground on the left, a Paradox Girl in a simple blouse with a business suit skirt seemed to be mothering another Paradox Girl who was gushing in her prom dress and tiara. And I then realized that the raised surface on which the central Paradox Girl stood was the top of a car. Very likely a fancy car, because another Paradox Girl dressed as a limo driver was glaring at the Paradox Girl atop the car disapprovingly. The central Paradox Girl looked right at the camera, cocked her head to one side, and shrugged her shoulders as if to say, "Eh, what are you gonna do?" It was a really fun visual. And with the Paradox Girl title logo, I immediately got the sense that our protagonist was capable of traveling through time and intersecting with her own history. And in this instance, several times so. It also hinted a bit at the character's playful and carefree personality, which will become more evident as we get into this story.
And given the non-linear nature of this comic book, I understand why you are asking me to participate in this podcast program to talk about it. Given my quantum perspective, I am uniquely qualified to summarize the story in a way that makes linear sense to everyone else. If I may.
If you may? In your upper story, ain't you already doing it?
Yes, I am. I am attempting to be polite.
Grundisay, let nice blue man group man speak.
Very well. These are the series of events that occur in Paradox Girl, Issue 1. In 50,000 BC, two Paradox Girls appear before a prehistoric tortoise. One tries to take a toasted waffle out of the hand of the other. In 594 AD Britain, Paradox Girl steals the fabled sword Excalibur from King Arthur as he is about to knight a new member of the Round Table. In 596 AD, two Paradox Girls appear amidst a war of battling armored knights. The girls are also fighting, but with each other, over a toasted waffle. In 1871, Chicago, two Paradox Girls are focused on the single toasted waffle between their hands, oblivious to the conflagration that rages around them. In 1921, Brisbane, Queensland, an injured Paradox Girl appears in front of a hospital. The treating doctor develops an attraction during her stay and invites Paradox Girl to a candlelit dinner after she is discharged. He says something that makes Paradox Girl overturn the dining table and vanish. In 1956, Tokyo, Japan, Paradox Girl consults with a pair of Japanese men with a hand drawing of a kaiju monster, asking them how to kill it. The men are of no help. In 1985, in a Cityopolis supermarket, Paradox Girl purchases a box of a new product, banana-flavored Waffos brand prepackaged waffles. In 1987, in a Cityopolis supermarket, dozens of Paradox Girls fight over the last available box of Waffos, which has been discontinued by the manufacturer. One holds the box triumphantly. On the story-designated day in 2014 Cityopolis, at 3:31 a.m., Paradox Girl, dressed in a tattered business suit, sits on a chair in the bedroom of the home of Axiom Man, another superhero of Cityopolis, who is trying to sleep. She thanks him for the training she will have later in the day while she eats a toasted waffle in her hand. At 10:49 a.m., Paradox Girl, dressed in a clean, untattered business suit, appears on her living room couch and turns on the television. At 11:11 a.m., Paradox Girl, dressed in a t-shirt and shorts, appears in her bathroom, undresses, takes a shower, and dresses in a business suit in her bedroom in front of a sleeping Paradox Girl. At 11:23 a.m., she watches TV with the other Paradox Girl in the living room. Both wear the same business suit. At 11:27, the sleeping Paradox Girl wakes up, puts on her glasses, dresses in a t-shirt and shorts, and goes to the kitchen to pour herself some coffee, while the two other Paradox Girls in the business suits continue to sit on the couch together and laugh at a cartoon mouse on the television. At 11:30, the Paradox Girl in the shirt and shorts discovers an empty Waffos box in the refrigerator and chastises the Paradox Girls on the couch for not replacing them. She then holds out her hand as another Paradox Girl in a tattered business suit appears to hand her a fresh, unopened box. Paradox Girl places two Waffos in the toaster while the television shows a news of a kaiju monster being sighted outside of the city. The phone rings. Paradox Girl takes the call from Axiom Man, who tells her she is late for training. The Waffos pop up, and the two Paradox Girls on the couch fight over one of the Waffos. Paradox Girl drops the phone when she notices the other three Paradox Girls and the two Waffos in the toaster are gone. It is now 11:33 a.m. Paradox Girl appears at a Cityopolis gym and falls on the floor before Axiom Man, who is still on the phone. She tries to talk herself out of practicing meditation. Feeling hungry, she vanishes. At 4:30 p.m. in downtown Cityopolis, Axiom Man is fighting the kaiju monster with his heavy light beams. Paradox Girl appears in front of the monster and drops her waffle, which is then stepped on by the monster. An angry Paradox Girl retaliates, attacking the creature with various weapons until she is grabbed by the monster's hand, which injures her. Another Paradox Girl stabs the monster with Excalibur, which forces the now-dying kaiju to drop the Paradox Girl in his hand, who vanishes. At 5:03 p.m., the Paradox Girl, who killed the kaiju, poses atop the now-dead creature's body, flashing a victory sign with her fingers to the television news cameras. In 2045, at a Chicago public library, Paradox Girl reads about her battle with the kaiju monster in a history book. I am finished.
What just happened?
I am recounting the events of this story in chronological order so that everyone can better comprehend.
Except that didn't make no sense. Little Professor Man say main character Paradox Girl can travel back and forth through any time and anywhere. So you understood all that, Professor Solomon Grundy, Ph.D.?
Perhaps we should try following the events as they unfold within the story itself? The story opened at 11:23 a.m. on the designated day in 2014, with an establishing shot of a modern rectangular-shaped house. Inside the dwelling's master bedroom slept a young woman, under a blanket that barely covered her back. This was our titular character known only as Paradox Girl. She looked as if she went to bed completely exhausted, clad in only a pair of underpants and one sock on her left foot.
She must have been dead tired, sleeping like a top before she could take off her socks.
Indeed, Mr. Manning. Her other sock, along with a pair of glasses and a t-shirt with a graphic that depicted an alarm clock within an interdictory circle, laid haphazardly atop the bed. The surrounding bedroom was also in a state of disarray, with shoes and clothing strewn about the floor or hanging out of a partially open dresser drawer. While the sleeping Paradox Girl on the bed was framed in the center of the large panel, what had truly captured my attention was the feminine shadow cast over the young woman's sleeping form.
Yes, it is the Paradox Girl from 24 minutes in her future.
Yes, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I do not understand.
That's 'cause little Blue Man Group Man already ahead of himself. Wait, Grundy gets it while the Doc don't?
This Solomon Grundy is much more astute than you give him credit for, Tobias Manning, while also less intelligent.
Aw, thanks, little Blue Man Group Man. Kind of a backhanded compliment there, Doc.
You understand at the end of the podcast, Tobias Manning.
Shall we focus instead on this part of the story, gentlemen? Yes, the shadow falling over Paradox Girl was, indeed, Paradox Girl herself, which we will see in a moment. The single caption box on this page asked a not-so-simple question. Do you know what happens when you violate causality?
By definition, nothing.
Were you reading from the following page, John, or speaking from personal experience?
Does it matter?
I suppose not. On the second page, Paradox Girl woke up and grudgingly grabbed her glasses, put on the t-shirt and a pair of pull-string shorts, and then loosely pinned up her hair with a pair of chopstick-style Kanzashi hair sticks, while loud laughter could be heard from the other side of the bedroom door. With an arched eyebrow, Paradox Girl opened the door to see two other Paradox Girls, wearing makeup and with their hair done in a tight bun held by the same Kanzashi sticks, and dressed in identical smart business suits with short skirts and long jackets. They were sitting next to each other on a couch, laughing hysterically at a cartoon playing on a flat-screen wall television. The just-awakened Paradox Girl dismissed the two as she poured herself a cup of already-made coffee from a pot on the kitchen counter. The caption narration stated that, while it is trite to say that one has to learn to live with oneself, in Paradox Girl's case, it is literally true. And as our casually dressed Paradox Girl had taken a sip of coffee and absently stared at the two smart-dressed Paradox Girls who were still cackling uproariously, the page cut to the title of this tale. A Day in the Life of a Paradox. Writer, Katie L. Burkan. Artist, Ishan Lee. Editor, Peter Bensley. On page 4, the casual Paradox Girl continued to ignore her two other selves and leaned into the now opened refrigerator. Her lips beautifully curled to form a snarl as she discovered an empty cardboard box. She then yelled at her two other selves, demanding to know who forgot to replace the Waffos. The next panel caption explained that Paradox Girl loved Waffos, but sadly, the market for banana-flavored toaster waffles wasn't there, and the food manufacturer stopped making them in 1987. The last box was becoming harder and harder for her to obtain.
Indeed, as we see in this panel, in the 1987 Cityopolis supermarket, dozens of Paradox Girls fight over the last available box of Waffos.
Dang, some of that roughhousing was downright brutal. Hair pulling and choke holds, and one of them girls kicked another one right in the gut.
One Paradox Girl holds the box triumphantly.
I do like the coloring effect of the gray tones in this flashback panel, with only the box of Waffos depicted in color. Back to the present. The frustrated, casually dressed Paradox Girl extended a hand to her side, as if inviting the other Paradox Girls to provide an answer to her angry query.
Or expecting one of them to pop through time to hand her a fresh box right then.
Indeed, Mr. Manning. For in the next panel, a fourth Paradox Girl appeared through a shimmering pink time portal, placing a new box of Waffos into her casual doppelganger's outstretched hand.
Grundy see that this new Paradox Girl's clothes all scuffed and torn. Is this the Paradox Girl that got the last Waffos box in the big fat in 1987?
We shall see, Mr. Grundy. We shall see.
No. It is the future Paradox Girl from page 22 of this story.
John,
have you done ever hear of the spoiler alert, Doc?
Spoiler?
As in spoiling the surprise? Telling us something we didn't know before we wanted to know?
Ah, you actually reveal something that I did not know 15 minutes from now. So, that would be fair, would it not?
I don't understand. How can you not know it? Whatever it is, until 15 minutes from now, if you know about it already right now.
Remember, John's quantum perception enables him to observe his entire life from the moment of his birth as well as his future life events simultaneously.
Right, so he should already know now what he's gonna know later, wouldn't he?
I will realize it for the first time in 15 minutes. But right now, I am observing my future self in 31 minutes, remembering my realizing it for the first time 16 minutes prior.
Yeah.
On the next page, there was a cute panel of the casual Paradox Girl holding up the fresh box of Waffos with an enthusiastic woot, which was followed by another cute panel of her opening the Waffos box while the newly arrived, tattered suit Paradox Girl tightened her arms and shoulders in anticipation. After popping two Waffos into the toaster, the casual and tattered Paradox Girls turned toward the ringing telephone across the living room, in which the two Paradox Girls on the couch were watching a special news report about a giant monster being sighted on the outskirts of Cityopolis.
You don't suppose the listeners are following along, okay?
They are looking at the comic book page scan that is posted on the gallery page on the podcast website.
At the same time as they're listening to this podcast, or afterwards?
Yes.
The tattered Paradox Girl immediately went for the phone, until she was pulled back by her torn jacket by the casually dressed Paradox Girl, who flatly asked the new arrival, "Don't you have someone to be?" The casual Paradox Girl glared at the tattered suit Paradox Girl and then reached for the phone. Before she could even say hello, the voice on the other line immediately asked, "How is it that you can travel through time and still be late for everything?"
"Heh."
"Lots of practice," she replied cheekily.
Ha ha!
Or maybe she said that matter-of-factly. I can see it read either way.
The Schrodinger Principle?
Yes, I suppose so.
Ain't Schrodinger that young'un who played the Pianna in that thar comic strip about them other little young'uns? You mean the one who played for peanuts? Heh? I don't get it.
In a beautifully rendered shot, Paradox Girl then casually twirled a dangling strand of her hair with her finger as she explained to the person on the phone that she still needed to have breakfast and a shower before...
She stops mid-sentence to notice the waffles in the toaster are gone.
So were other three Paradox Girls. Other three Paradox Girls must have took waffles. I like how the little missus' face and hands look exactly like that famous painted picture you showed us once. The Screech?
The Scream, Mr. Manning, by Edvard Munch. And yes, that was a cute little cartoon take moment. Paradox Girl dropped the phone and immediately overturned the toaster to be sure it was empty. Meanwhile, the voice on the dangling receiver asked, Paradox Girl, hello? And then suddenly stated, oh, never mind, here you are.
Wait, what?
On page...
Doc.
Wait for it?
Bitter.
Disappointed, Paradox Girl dropped the toaster onto the counter and started to vanish. The pink shimmer on her left arm forming a pink line that flew like a string across the spread to the first panel of the next page to show her appear in her bathroom, 12 minutes before she woke up. She then undressed and stepped into the shower, her naked body tastefully covered by an array of caption boxes that explained her so-called origin story. It all started when she was a librarian in China. Well, it was a wish from a Chinese dragon, who gifted her with the power of breakdancing. She won the competition, and then went on to become the queen of all, Jersey. Not the new one, the original one.
Wait, what?
While she dresses in front of her sleeping past self, casting the shadow, we see on page one, Paradox Girl reveals that she had actually changed her past so many times, she no longer knows what her true history is. In effect, she is now a living paradox, a time-traveling girl with no origin, and apparently without purpose. So she fights crime with her partner, Axiom Man, who she says is the person on the phone 10 minutes later.
Paradox Girl did admit that, sadly, she spent more of her time fighting herself than she did fighting criminals, as we had seen in that one panel of the Paradox Girls clashing in 1987, as well as the minor tussle over answering the phone, and the fact that her time-displaced selves had stolen her waffles from the toaster.
And the other skirmishes that I see on page...
I don't understand why she didn't just pop in a couple more of them waffles in the toaster. There were more than two in a box.
There are 6 waffles left in the box.
But that would be several minutes in the future. Right now, the fully cleaned and business suit-dressed Paradox Girl stepped away from her sleeping past self toward the bedroom door, through which she could hear very loud laughter. She opened the door to the bedroom and saw another similarly dressed Paradox Girl sitting on the couch laughing at the cartoon playing on the television.
Wait, Grunda thought there were 2 Paradox Girls watching the TV. Don't you get it, Grunda? The Paradox Girl we've been following around in the story is now the other Paradox Girl watching the TV. If that's so, then how come Pretty Paradox Girl not laughing too?
She is laughing on the next page.
Our Paradox Girl sat down on the couch and told the laughing Paradox Girl to quiet down before she woke herself up, then asked what was so funny about the cartoon. The other Paradox Girl started to explain the cartoon, but then erupted into another laughing fit after watching the antics on the screen. And our Paradox Girl also became caught up in the hysterics.
I see in the background the Paradox Girl in the t-shirt from earlier has now come out and discovered the empty box of waffles in the icebox.
Yes, and the very mention of the waffles had our 2 sharp-dressed Paradox Girls eyeing each other, as the rest of the action that we had read earlier obviously played out between the panels, until we reached the point where the new Waffos popped out of the toaster, which we did not see before.
Because this happens when the Paradox Girl we are following is on the phone.
And the two Paradox Girls in suits immediately grabbed one of the Waffos and started playing tug of war like two children. And then we get a fun sequence throughout the rest of page 11 as the two Paradox Girls struggled for the Waffo throughout different points in time, including what I presume was a moment during the Great Chicago Fire, a medieval battle, a prehistoric setting, high over downtown Cityopolis where a large reptilian monster was wreaking havoc, and then on a city rooftop where the other Paradox Girl had kicked our Paradox Girl on her backside. She landed unceremoniously on the floor of an exercise room in an undisclosed building. Right in front of Axiom Man, an Asian man in a red, white, and blue suit with oversized boots and gauntlets and sunglasses. He was on the phone and said, "Oh, never mind, here you are."
"So this must be at the other end of the telephone call at the time when the Waffos went missing back on page 6.
"Indeed, you are following along this nonlinear series of events quite capably."
"Is this what it's like for you, Doc M, to see time go by?"
"Not even close."
Axiom Man crouched down to greet the new arrival with a facetious, "About time." "Ooh, time puns. I never get sick of those," Paradox Girl replied, likely more facetiously. Axiom Man asked Paradox Girl if she was ready for training, when another Paradox Girl appeared on the right side of the panel to tell herself not to bother, because the training, quote, "is really, really boring." Axiom Man showed incredible patience and stated that in order for the Paradox Girls to control themselves, they must first learn to control their thoughts. He then ordered the new Paradox Girl to get back to work, and she reluctantly disappeared.
Grundy noticed little pink string going off page from where new Paradox Girl appear and disappear.
Indeed, this is actually a very clever visual cue, as we will see in a moment.
"Now, who is getting ahead of himself, Professor?"
"It takes one to know one, John."
"Indeed."
Our Paradox Girl was about to say something, but the stern, silent face of Axiom Man told her that he was not having any of it. So after a brief, beautifully rendered pout, Paradox Girl began her training on the bottom of page 12. And in this case, training was actually the practice of meditation, sitting in the Burmese position in a lush area of greenery in the outdoor air. Axiom Man instructed Paradox Girl from off-panel to calm her mind and think of nothing.
Which is not as easy as it sounds. Huh.
And of course, in the final panel of the page, Paradox Girl slyly opened one eye, as if to check to make sure Axiom Man wasn't watching as she flashed a cheeky grin and started to fade out of panel 1, with the pink string effect winding off the left side of the page, to actually connect to the string on the previous page, where she appeared to tell herself that the training was really, really boring. And of course, on the previous page when Axiom Man told her to get back to work, the string of her disappearance connected to the string coming back to panel 2 of this page, which showed Paradox Girl reappear on her knees, slouching with scornful dissatisfaction. Axiom Man was apparently pacing in front of the not really meditating Paradox Girl, who stood up and brushed off her skirt, admitting that she did not see how all of this training was supposed to help her. Axiom Man replied matter-of-factly that Paradox Girl was essentially a victim of her own petty whims, and that she needed to learn to control her urges. At that point, Paradox Girl's stomach started to rumble.
"That's right. Pretty Paradox Girl still hadn't eaten breakfast yet."
As Paradox Girl started to fade away, Axiom Man said with a wave and a smile that she will thank him for this someday.
"He sounds might certain of that."
"That is because she thanks him 8 hours and 23 minutes before."
"Doc, how many times do I gotta tell you?"
"7.
"Ooh. Okay."
On the top of page 14, Our Paradox Girl appeared on the couch of her living room at 10:49 a.m. that morning. She was the only one in the room. She stared at the cold toaster on the kitchen counter and told herself, "Soon." She then picked up the television remote to turn on the flat screen on the wall. And then there were a series of repeated panels from previous pages that show her being joined by another Paradox Girl in the business suit, her earlier self from page 9, and then the arrival of the t-shirt-wearing Paradox Girl from page 3, with the two Paradox Girls laughing at the cartoons, and then the waffles popped up from the toaster. The two Paradox Girls on the couch eyed each other. And then we have an almost exact repeat of page 11 on page 15. The two Paradox Girls in suits immediately grabbed one of the waffles in that tug of war. The Chicago Fire, the medieval battle, the prehistoric era, above the city with the monster, and then on a city rooftop as our Paradox Girl, her business suit now torn and tattered from that scuffle, kicked the other Paradox Girl away.
Onto the Axiom Man's gym on page 12.
Right. And on the final panel of page 15, our Paradox Girl appeared on the downtown Cityopolis street at 4:30 p.m., holding up the waffle in triumph.
Her victory is short-lived as...
Doc? Dun. Ha! Paradox Girl's so much fun! Heh. Course, since she already went through that time-traveling throwdown 4 pages ago, she knew exactly what she had to do to win.
She actually had no choice in the matter, since that battle had already occurred. Her actions, and the outcome of those actions, were already predetermined. She could not change them.
Actually, John, Paradox Girl did have the ability to do something different if she wanted to. As you may recall when you had recapped the first panels of page 8 of this story, Paradox Girl had actually changed history so many times that she no longer knew her own origins, and I suspect, her own name. It is possible that she may have realized the consequences of that, and thus is consciously following through on the actions of her future selves so she would not break her timeline any further.
Solomon Grundy thinks she did the same stuff because she knew she would get the waffle by following through with the fight the way her future self did before.
Very astute, Mr. Grundy.
She could choose to take another action? Change the outcome? Does that mean that I had never considered that before.
Paradox Girl's victory was short-lived, as a giant lizard monster that we had seen rampaging in the background during the earlier Waffle Crosstime tussles stomped the street right behind Paradox Girl, the shock making her drop her Waffle.
Axiom Man is there as well, flying overhead, fighting the kaiju monster by blasting it with his heavy light beams, to no avail.
Nice to keep hearing you sticking with us in the here and now, Doc, and not spoiling us with nothing.
The waffle fell on the asphalt in front of Paradox Girl, but before she could do anything else, the monster had taken another step forward and crushed the waffle under its giant scaly foot.
Ha! Stompify! Stompify?
That was the sound effect the creature made. When it first stomped behind Paradox Girl earlier on the page, the sound effect was a fun, onomatopoetic stomp. And then, when it stomped on the waffle, the sound effect became stompify.
Ha ha!
Which is an impossible sound to make with only a single impact.
Well, it's all part of the fun.
Right. Just like the sound effect of the waffle itself getting squished was poo. Ha 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 ha!
I never do understand this appeal of scatological humor.
I'd have thunk you wouldn't be able to understand any type of humor, Doc. But you did just admit you recognized just what type of humor that was.
Axiom Man called down to Paradox Girl, stating that his powers, which he called heavy light beams, were having no effect on the creature.
Professor, Doc Big Apple here already told us that on the previous... Wait a minute. Doc, your dad burned spoiled us again.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
The monster swung its massive tail and swatted Axiom Man into a building, stunning him. Our Paradox Girl, still on the street, saw him start to fall, only to be caught by another Paradox Girl that suddenly appeared in midair.
I suppose I should have noticed this afore, but it seems little Miss Paradox here can fly as well as time travel.
Apparently so, as we see on the rest of this page as Paradox Girl continuously disappeared and reappeared in midair with different weapons with which to attack the creature. A chainsaw, a gun, a shovel, a baseball bat, a particle beam weapon, a folding chair, a bow and arrow, a kitchen whisk.
Solomon Grundy noticed some of these Paradox Girls are wearing different clothes.
Right, as if some distant past and future versions of herself were arriving to join in the fight. Our Paradox Girl appeared again in mid-air before the creature, brandishing a katana in one hand and a machine gun in the other. She said, quote, "Something's gotta hurt you." Then she was suddenly plucked out of the air by the creature's huge, scaly hand. And then we have a dramatic panel at the end of page 17, which showed the creature's ferocious eye, reflecting the peril of the caught Paradox Girl.
Oh no! Big Godzilla monster gonna eat pretty Paradox Girl!
It does not.
Doc?
What followed was a dramatic and humorous two-page spread, with a giant panel of the monster surrounded by the Cityopolis buildings. The creature suddenly dropped Paradox Girl, who immediately vanished and spun a pink travel string through a series of 8 small and silent panels along the bottom of the spread. Paradox Girl appeared in front of an old-style hospital.
In Brisbane, Queensland, 1921.
I have to take your word on that, John, since the comic itself only gives me the hospital architecture and the surprised nurse's uniform to go by. The second panel showed Paradox Girl lying in a hospital bed, with the cliché thermometer in her mouth and cold press on her forehead, while a handsome doctor smiled and looked at her chart. The third panel had obviously taken place sometime later. Paradox Girl was out of the hospital and sat at a candlelit dinner table across from the same doctor, who expressed his feelings for her with a simple heart shape within a word balloon. The fourth panel had Paradox Girl surprisingly overturn the table, dumping their dinner, wine, and candlesticks atop the aghast doctor as she faded away.
Was it something he said?
Yes.
The pink string of her fade-out looped to the fifth panel as Paradox Girl appeared in a room somewhere in Japan, complete with shoji walls.
In 1956 Tokyo, Japan.
Again, I have to take your word on that. She was showing a simplistic drawing of the kaiju monster, which I suspect she drew herself, to 2 Japanese men who appeared perplexed by her silent question.
Paradox Girl asks the men how to kill it. They are of no help.
Well, that was evident based on what we see in the panel. Paradox Girl's knee shimmered away and the pink string flowed into the sixth panel, which had Paradox Girl sitting at a library table, propping up her head with one hand while she pored through a huge stack of books.
She is in a Chicago public library in 2045.
Once again, I have to take your word on that, John. Though the next panel did reveal the Chicago skyline out the window, and the fact that she was indeed in the future, since she was looking at a picture of herself stabbing the monster with a sword in what must have been a history book. The pink string flowed to the eighth panel, which showed Paradox Girl playfully snatch the same sword from the hands of a medieval king in a knighting ceremony, with a playful yoink.
Ha!
An Arthurian knighting ceremony.
And then the string looped back onto the first large panel behind the monster as Paradox Girl appeared and stabbed the monster in the back with the sword, which made him drop her past self in the first place. Meanwhile, Above some buildings in the background on the left, there was a glimpse of the two past Paradox Girls fighting over the Wafo from pages 11 and 15.
Heh, that's clever.
This entire spread was clever, especially because it was all silent. The amazing art of Ishan Lee did all of the work to convey this part of the story, and had done so brilliantly. The next page has a huge panel of Paradox Girl standing atop the dead monster on the city street, flashing a victory sign with her fingers at the news crew in the foreground reporting the scene. She then stepped down from the creature to join the approaching Axiom Man, who asked Paradox Girl if she could go back in time to stop the creature before it wrecked half the city. "Why would I do that?" Paradox Girl asked incredulously.
"Right, why risk breaking time and all that, since we figured she may not want to be doing that no more?"
"Yeah."
"He hadn't stomped on my Wafo back then," Paradox Girl continued. Axiom Man raised a hand in an attempt to start to respond, but then realized that he had no rebuttal.
"He could have stated that she would have also prevented the beast from stepping on the Wafo."
"I suppose he could, if he had thought of it. But he didn't. So he simply walked away, expressing his thanks for her help, as well as for saving him from the fall earlier." "Oh, right," Paradox Girl realized, and she immediately blipped back in time to catch the falling Axiom Man from page 17. "Welcome," she told him. Paradox Girl was back at the dead monster on the street before Axiom Man could notice that she had left. Axiom Man stopped and pointed out that Paradox Girl could be pretty handy in saving the day when she was not fighting with herself. Paradox Girl shrugged. "What am I supposed to do?" she asked. "It's not like I can outsmart myself." Axiom Man placed an encouraging hand on her shoulder. "Stop thinking you have to," he said. "Just do something you've never done before." Paradox Girl gave it a moment of thought, and then vanished to 1985 in a Cityopolis supermarket, which boasted a large display of a brand new breakfast item called Wafos. The next panel was a repeat of the scene from earlier that morning on page 4, where she handed a freshly purchased box of Wafos to herself. The next page replayed a few panels from earlier in the story, the phone call, and the two Paradox Girls from the couch fighting over one of the Wafos that popped up from the toaster. But our Paradox Girl had hid herself behind the kitchen counter to grab the other Wafo from the toaster with another playful yoink before she disappeared to the final page, which was a few hours earlier that morning, at 3:31 a.m. to be exact, and in the bedroom of Axiom Man, who had covered his tired head with his pillow in an attempt to quiet the rambling words of Paradox Girl. Casually sitting in a chair beside the bed, she told him that the training she would do later that day gave her the focus that came in handy later.
"Handy later to defeat the monster, or to grab that Wafo?"
"Both."
But, she continued, the training was still really, really boring, and she asked Axiom Man whether there was anything he could do to make it more fun.
"There is not, and he does not."
"That's not really a spoiler, Doc."
And in the final panel, Paradox Girl playfully winked at the reader as she finally had taken the first bite of her long-anticipated breakfast. And that was the end of A Day in the Life of a Paradox, from Paradox Girl, Issue 1.
The story assessment presents much to ponder.
Indeed, John. To summarize, this 24-page story was a brilliantly conceived tale that was able to employ a potentially complicated concept, such as the non-linearity of time travel paradoxes, in a way that was very easy to follow.
Thanks in part to my chronologically ordered explanation, I am sure.
Really, Doc?
Really? I actually give all of the credit to writer Katie L. Borken, who also managed to present this concept in a fun and quirky way through a very unique protagonist. Paradox Girl was erratic, flighty, impulsive, naughty, childish, and willful, and sometimes a bit flaky. She seemed to act first and deal with the consequences later, or not deal with them at all. She had fights with herself, and she was essentially bumbling her way through her day, whether trying to stop a huge monster or merely getting herself some breakfast. She could prove to be such a frustrating character with which to deal for someone like the straight-laced Axiom Man, but Miss Borken's characterization of Paradox Girl also added a youthful buoyancy and vivacious spirit that one cannot help but love. And again, the simple yet expressive line work of manhwa artist Ishan Lee brilliantly conveyed this sparkling spirit, as well as created a sense of motion and realism with an amazingly sparse amount of detail. The storytelling was fantastic, and even the use of repeated panels, which could be seen as a bit of a cheat elsewhere, actually served this story by reminding the reader of exactly at which point of time the story would overlap itself. And again, that clever effect of the pink streamlines used to convey Paradox Girl's time traveling, by showing the paths she takes in and out of panels and pages to another physical point of the comic book. It was a great visual thread to better follow Paradox Girl's non-linear mischief. And as I had previously stated, all six Paradox Girl adventures had taken this refreshing time travel concept into six brilliantly different directions. The second issue, Paradox Girl vs. a Wolverine, was a fun madcap screwball comedy in which what was thought to be a simple solution to a problem would instead make the situation escalate to absurd extremes. And the clever Chekhov's Guns paradox story in the third issue demonstrated the impact Paradox Girl's impetuous actions could have on other people. The deeply moving fourth story, Time Wounds All Heals, had made Paradox Girl realize that even her incredible powers could not fix everything. And the brilliant The Paradox Who Loved Me in issue 5 was a fun James Bond-esque romp that, to me, was also a quirky take on the time travel concept in a renowned short story by Robert A. Heinlein. And the sixth story, House of had Paradox Girl's lack of impulse control land her in a jam of which she could not use her powers to get out. Again, all of these tales are brilliant done-in-one wonders, and if I had the, time, I would eventually cover them all.
Grundy thought this was a funny story, but Grundy thought it also a little sad how Purdy Paradox Girl changed history so much that she no longer knew who she was.
Yes. Paradox Girl was essentially a literal representation of a comic book character that had been retconned over and over and over again. Quite similar to the situation of Superman, who first appeared in 1938 in the Golden Age of comics, and was reimagined in 1956 for the Silver Age, and again in 1971 for the Bronze Age, and again in the post-crisis era of 1986 with the John Byrne-headed revamp. And then there were further reimaginings of Superman's origin, in miniseries such as Superman Birthright and Superman Secret Origin, and then the New 52 Superman, and then Superman Rebirth, and then two Year One stories that had been released within the past year, one written by Marv Wolfman and another by Frank Miller. So longtime readers of past versions of Superman may no longer recognize or relate to the Superman being published in comics today. However, I myself have always found comfort that, regardless of changes to a character's continuity, the so-called invalidated stories that I had enjoyed in my youth are still there for me to enjoy in my long boxes, and no reboots or updates would ever take that away.
Intriguing. I'm curious about the possibility of changing predetermined outcomes. and the potential ramifications to temporal continuity, and this example of the constantly changing Superman. It bears further analysis and experimentation.
I'm sorry, John. What?
Farewell.
Now, what was all of that about?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Well, you were the one that made him realize something he didn't afford, even though he knew about it all the time. So if whatever Doc does with it comes around to bite us in the backside, I'm just glad it's not my fault.
Solomon Grundy wonder what Little Blue Man Group Man meant about Little Professor Man needing to recover from end of podcast. Ain't podcast done?
Say, that's right. Looks like you can make an easy full recovery if there's nothing you have to recover from.
Zoom crew, under attack again?
I don't know. But given everything that had happened the last two seasons of the show, be prepared for anything.
Vashta! Nix adjusting ear and throat circuits to instantaneous translation.
It's a bunch of funky hippie kids on a decked-out triple-decker Modi cycle.
Super Cycle Search for Mother Box has locked onto the dimensional timescape and location.
Then these must be the desperados that stole her.
But we don't steal nothing.
Well, that is not entirely true, Mr. Grundy. Is it, Mr. Manning?
Okay.
Please, forgive our lack of manners. Welcome to our studio, O Honorable Ones of the Forever People. I am Zoom Yukinori. These are my friends, Tobias Manning and Solomon Grundy. Perhaps we can all sit down and talk about what brings you here?
The older one seems nice, but the others are a bit more crude.
Demons drags! They already admit that they are thieves! Surely they are the ones who have taken Mother Box!
Wait, Maya is your Mother Box?
You know these yahoos, Professor?
I know of them, Mr. Manning. These are the Forever People. Mark Moonrider, Big Bear, Beautiful Dreamer, Viken, and Seraphan. They are children of New Genesis. And that is their Super Cycle, a living machine that allows them to travel to other worlds and dimensions via the Electron Road.
You know quite a bit about us and our methods, Zoom Yukinori.
Enough to know how to steal Mother Box from.
Please, as Mr. Grundy had stated, we did not steal Maya, your Mother Box. My other friend, Lanos, founder, and...
Lanos? What is Lanos?
Founder, huh? A likely store, stranger. Now where are you hiding her?
Please, I'm sure we can all discuss this calmly. Lanos? Maya?
It is Mother Box.
And she is unharmed. We had feared.
Apologies. We shall take the Mother Box back with us and be on our way.
Take? No, you shall not take her.
Lanos, what are you doing?
Some sort of energy field.
I knew it! It was all a trick. Bet they want our super cycle next.
That shall not come to pass. Release Mother Box, strangers!
Super Cycle's response circuits have identified the shield's frequency. If I can adjust my megaton shock bolt to match it. Did it!
No, this one must.
Lame-o!
Hold on, this is all just a misunderstand.
No more honey tongue lies, thief.
Release Mother Box, Grundish creature!
Lion Man can't hurt Grundy. Solomon Grundy, strongest one there.
Oh, I am called Bear, not Lion. Oof!
As Grundy's saying, Grundy, strongest one there is. Even stronger than Bear, not Lion Man.
Oof!
All right, stranger. Let's see if you're faster on the draw. I got me an alpha bullet with your name on it. Sure as my name is Seraphin.
Son, you ain't no real cowboy. You sound more than a bad spaghetti flick actor. But with a little practice, you might make a good chuck line rider.
I'm a man who's gotta do what he knows what he's gotta do.
All right then, boy. Go ahead. Make my day.
Draw!
Yeah!
You're pretty good, little buckaroo. But there ain't nobody been able to outgun. Hey now, what's happening to my arms? They're moving on their...
I could have taken him, Viking. There was no need to horn in with your magnetic powers.
Magna power. And the fact that you currently cannot move your arms says otherwise.
A minor setback.
But a setback just the same.
Just give me a minute.
Help Mark stop their father box, Viking. I have their leader.
Lanos is not a Wait, what are you? No!
Hey now, what are you doing to him, beautiful?
I sense that this one had experienced a lot of trauma in his lifetime. I'm simply forcing his mind to relive some of it. The worst of it.
I've never seen you this... well, like this before.
The last creature who had captured our mother box deserved no mercy, Seraphim. Nor should he.
I had never encountered a father box quite like this before.
Designation, father box, is inapplicable.
Forgive my lending a hand without asking first, Mark Moonrider.
I will accept both of them, my friend. My thanks. That had done it.
And now, creature!
Go!
If he was not such a foul creature, I would thank him for the fun I just had.
Another moment, and this one will be in no condition to dissuade us.
Mother Box is alive, but she's minimally functioning. I do not understand.
We can heal her on New Genesis, Viking. We must take Mother Box and depart while our opponents are defeated.
Wait, Big Bear. Their father box was just a projection emanating from this component on their electronic console.
They done shanghaied our Mother Box. Maybe we should do the same to...
Mother Box, she's... Forever, people, stand down. Mother Box is bonded with their Lanos component.
What?
They are circuit mates? Then she's with them, willingly.
Told you so.
If they bonded, what you were doing to their lame-o cube is also happening to her.
Indeed. Quickly, Mark Moonrider, bring the Lanos unit here. I must work to repair the damage we have caused, to save them both.
My apologies, stranger. I should've...
He's no stranger. He is, they are, friends of Lanos, circuit mate to Mother Box. They did not take Mother Box, but had saved and sheltered her from whomever did. That makes them friends of the Forever People.
Apologies, creature. Now that we are friends, I can thank you for the fun we had shared. We must do it again sometime. Sometime after you wake up.
And I'm honored to lose in a showdown with one ace-high gunslinger such as yourself, Tobias Manning.
Call me Terror Man. You handle losing real classy, son. Maybe when you're old enough to get some stubble, I'll teach you a few tricks.
And please accept my apologies, friend Zoom Yukinori. I am afraid I overreacted. If you will allow me, I can find some more pleasant memories to...
That's quite all right, Miss Dreamer. You were only...
There.
Greetings and salutations. No. You.
It's all right, Circuit Mate to Mother Box. Forgive me, Circuit Mate to Maya. Maya chose to stay with you, and with you she should remain. The Forever People will leave you in peace, and with our best wishes for happiness.
Gratitude.
But we still don't know who or what had taken Mother Maya in the first place.
I can provide the exact timescape coordinates where I had found Maya, if that would help.
Yes. Perhaps we can use that location to determine the true abductor's path from New Genesis.
Come, Forever People. Let us depart.
But what about Grundy, friend? Should we not?
He'll be all right. I'll pass on your sorry message when he comes to.
My gratitude, Tobias Manning.
Very good. The sooner we solve this mystery, the sooner we can ensure Maya's and Lanos's continued safety.
Continued?
Whoever had stolen Maya from us may try to do so from you. And Lanos, too, now that they had bonded. Be vigilant, Zoom Yukinori. Farewell to you all. And goodbye, Maya.
Wow.
So... bonded, eh? I had a feeling you were sitting this electric sage hen, Lame-O, but I had no idea you'd already done hooked up. In more ways than one, I reckon.
That is confidential.
Maya, you old son of a gun.
Did we win?
Ooh, yeah, Grundy, you wiped the whole floor with all of them. Them dudes will think twice afore they try and steal Lame-O's lady love again.
Oh. So, Bear Not Lion Man and friends found out it was all misunderstanding and left peaceably.
Affirmative.
Dang, Doc M was right.
Pre-Crisis Apocalypse, July 30th, 1985.
Well, Tassad.
I had received a cloak transmission from the motorbox, All Great Darkseid. The backdoor protocol I had installed into the Owen computer had done a complete mental scan and analysis of Beautiful Dreamer's delicious manipulation of the Terran's mind. The final results are coming in, then... Yes, we have it! The next component of the anti-life equation!
Excellent, Tassad. And the Forever People.
Off on what the Terrans call the wild goose chase. Thanks to the false memories we had programmed into Lanos and Motorbox.
Very good. If we succeed, I will make sure you will be well rewarded.
Oh, Great Darkseid, but of course, to serve you is the greatest reward. But a world to control. Earth, perhaps, would be a valued token of...
You presume too much, Tassad.
Well, it doesn't have to be the entire Earth. It could just be California. Yes, California, just to play around with.
Such tawdry ambitions have no merit, Desaad. I would be master of all that exists, and that includes California.
Oh, of course, Great Darkseid. For now.
What was that?
Oh, sore mouth. I have a sore mouth, Great Darkseid.
Oh, I suggest a baking soda salt rinse. But first, I'm eager to put the next stage of our plan into action.
Yes, Great Darkseid, the so-called Zoom crew will not know what hit them.
The Dun and One Wonders Podcast Wonder Show is an unabashedly conceited member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, hosted by Zoom Yukinori. Sound editing by Isamu Hideaki Yukinori and Adrian Zett. The views expressed on Dun and One Wonders belong solely to the host and his cast of characters, who are not affiliated in any way with any professional comic book publisher or entertainment company. All copyright and trademarks of comic book characters and related concepts, as well as music, audio clips, and quoted text, are held by their respective owners. These are used for entertainment purposes only, and no copyright infringement is intended. Celebrity voices are impersonated, with special thanks to Nathaniel Wayne for providing the voice of Axiom Man, to Liz Swick for providing the voice of Paradox Girl, to Michael Bailey for providing the voice of Dr. Manhattan, to Delvin Williams for providing the voice of Bear, to Mike Staley for providing the voices of Viken and Seraphan, to Emma Lee for providing the voice of Beautiful Dreamer, to Pat Sampson for providing the voice of Mark Moonrider, to Siskoid for providing the voice of Desaad, and to Shag Matthews for providing the voice of Darkseid. The Dun and One Wonders Podcast Wonder Show is a Professor Zoom Productions production. Special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For more information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/fwpodcasts.